welcome to the Community Development Summit titled Organizing a Resilient Future, brought to you by the Permaculture Institute of North America, or PINA. If you support permaculture across the North American continent, then please consider becoming a PINA member today at pina.in. I'm Jesse, and I will be your host for today's summit. Our next presenter is the timeless Trathan Heckman, presenting on the topic of Daily Acts Pathways to Scale. Trathan is the founder and director of Daily Acts Organization. He serves on the board of Transition US and the California Water Efficiency Partnership, and is an advisory board member of the NorCal Community Resilience Network. Trathan helps people and groups reclaim the power of their actions to regenerate self, nature, and community. Trathan lives in Petaluma River watershed, where he grows food, medicine, and wonder while working to compost apathy and lack. I love that. Welcome, Trathan. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Jesse. It's great to hear with y'all.
Yes, it's an absolute pleasure. I've heard nothing but amazing things about Daily Acts, which I was not aware of until I started to work with Sean Jennings, a colleague of mine at PINA, but also a co-presenter here at the summit. And since learning about y'all, it's just been like one mind-blowing sort of example of what can be done at a scalable sort of level, which your whole presentation is going to be about, after the next. So I'm really looking forward to this, Trathan. Want to learn and want to be able to share this with all sorts of people who might pick up some of these pieces and techniques and start to apply them in their own town. So beautiful background garden, which I talked to Trathan ahead of time. That's his property. So that's a beautiful example of the types of things we can do and then scale it out to like cities and villages and stuff. So really looking forward to it, Trathan. The first question I have, in fact, the only question I have before I let you get on, is what I'm asking everybody, which is most people tend to think about permaculture as relating to like gardens, like you have in the picture behind you, and landscapes. But also we know as permaculturists that it totally relates to, and it might be even more important how it relates to, community development. How do you sort of think of permaculture relating to community dynamics?
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because like I said, I haven't been in the permaculture world as much for a while, but even 25 years ago, what you just said was the story is like, well, permaculture is more than gardens, right? Gardens and landscapes are an awesome part of it. And that's really the work I've been doing for the last near 25 years is sort of doing social scale permaculture. And, you know, I'll touch on at some point in the presentation of like the work of Rob Hopkins, who founded the Transition Town movement 15 or so years ago. I was tracking him when I was starting Daily Acts early on. And same thing, like that was the idea of transition, that it was sort of community scale permaculture.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it very much is. And a lot of the strategies apply. Sometimes they're different in a landscape or a garden versus, you know, growing an organization or doing fundraising or working on policy, you know, different facets, but informed by the same core values and ethics and approach, even if the strategies change sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, without further ado, because there's probably no better like way to understand what you just said than by looking at the work that y'all have been doing over these past years. Why don't you take it away? I'll be in the background if you need us or need me for anything. Otherwise, I'll see you at the end of your presentation. And thanks again, Trathan.
That sounds awesome. My pleasure. Good afternoon, Permies. It's so good to be here with you. When Sean and Jesse reached out about doing this talk, gave me a good chance to reflect back on my Permie roots and how much this incredible community has influenced me personally, and certainly every step of Daily Acts work over the last 2+ decades. So just want to first start with that, just kind of immense gratitude. And what I hope you get from this is some inspiration and insights, maybe some strategies that you could apply. A few of the sort of goals or focus areas is to show how can we scale and mainstream permaculture solutions like Jesse mentioned. And a thing we've been really focused on, I think, is incredibly important. It's not the only pathway, but how can we grow and sustain financially viable permaculture organizations and networks and businesses? And, you know, lots of other kind of insights I hope you glean. But another one of working with local government, you know, especially amidst all the national political craziness, but the power of partnering in general and partnering with government is really important. So those are kind of a few of the goals. And there's a bunch of other stuff in there I think you could glean insights from. I'm going to move through a lot of slides and stories. And, but at its core, daily acts is about the power of our individual and collective daily actions to affect personal and community transformation. It's kind of a Gandhian be the change approach in all aspects of what we do. And so we've always been about the power of small actions and the power of small groups and the power of community and the power of collaboration and the power of nature-based solutions. Those are themes you'll see throughout examples from our 2+ decades of work. And so at our core, our mission is to inspire transformative action that creates equitable, connected, and climate-resilient communities. And you'll hear more about our values and principles in a couple spots, but we're really guided by four core values, which are actually operating principles as well, just like you have core ethics in permaculture, and then you have operational principles and strategies. And for us, it's reverence. Start with your heart. Ripples is about being the change we wish to see, taking action to find our vision, our voice, and our path. Relationships, as Fritjof Capra has said, ecology is the science of relationships, and nature sustains the web of life by creating and nurturing community. So that's a core call to action for us of nurture community. And then having the resilience to adapt and persevere with joy. And those things are functional things we're actively working to embody and evolve into strategies most every day of the week. And so, we've kind of framed our work and done a lot of different things over the years. And one of the ways we kind of think about some of the problems we're facing now is with the complexity and the urgency of social and ecological crises and the crisis of democracy. Of that, people and groups and leaders and even whole communities are overwhelmed by the scale and urgency of what we're facing. And they need to know places where to start and how to take effective action and what are models we could utilize and strategies. And at a community scale, there's a lot of bigger needs around governance and policy and things like that. And so for us, again, kind of do a lot of different programs through time that you'll see. But a lot is around this permaculture idea of changing the world in a garden. And so a lot of our core work is around practical, holistic landscape solutions. And through time, we recognize the importance of affecting policy and wider governmental change. And then, just like what this conference is about, is spreading models and solutions and ideas. And so we're really looking at, like, how can we model our best and brightest where we live? Home, neighborhood, city, county, region, state. And then how do we work with and share these solutions with others and learn from others? And so, early on, when I was waking up to this kind of overwhelming state of our world, socially and ecologically, even like 30 years ago, I started to discover permaculture and permaculture-related solutions. And it just felt like this kind of bright spot that made my heart warm and gave me a sense of hope. And exposed to a lot of folks, permaculturist Mark Cohen and Paul Strauss from the United Plant Savers Sanctuary. The Bioneers Network is a really key partner of ours. Some of you may know these folks. That guy on the right, folks probably know, is Brock Dolman, the Beaver Believer at Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. Incredible permaculturist. On the left is Eric Olson, another incredible permaculturist and partner, standing in a swale of a landscape that was about the biggest, most rapid, full transformation I've ever seen. And then in the middle, that's Penny Livingston on the left, laughing like crazy in the middle of that picture. And she's at the site they first established, the Permaculture Institute in Northern California. And I could talk a lot about just about these three people and the site, but you could see on the right of that middle picture, there's a Cobb office and it has a dragon head pizza oven. You put your pizzas in the mouth of the dragon. And at some point, after years of getting exposed to these hopeful solutions and different permaculture ideas and landscapes all over the place, I walked through the gate right here at this property at the Permaculture Institute and just kind of had my heart, mind, and senses cracked open by the level of fecundity. And it was just that moment and years of moments of getting deeply infected by this transformative, rapidly regenerative approach that really kind of set me on my path. I was exposed early on. Penny used to bring like Jeff Lawton and Brad Lancaster and Darren Doherty, David Holmgren, a lot of the original permies. And it was amazing to get exposed to them and all the ways they interpreted and were applying permaculture. But Jeff Lawton used to talk with like just this fervent fever about that you could change the world in a garden. And he showed lots of examples of that. And so that's kind of, somewhat what we've been doing at DailyAx for the last 20 plus years. This is mine and my wife's and my daughter's and our, chickens and cats and other stuff. This is our landscape currently. We've been there almost 20 years now, but the picture on the top right was basically went from lawn to that within one spring. And it was the third landscape we had transformed over like an 8-year period. And so just getting practice in all sorts of different landscapes. And there's not as much on our kind of home garden stuff, but just to ground into what's going on where we live. It's about a seventh of an acre lot, 200 plus varieties of food, medicine, habitat. We have this 25-foot tall Pakistani black mulberry tree that's raining down mulberries into our garden, into our chicken coop right now. Multiple rainwater catchment systems, two gray water systems. Our cob oven and bench just died, unfortunately, after about 15 years. Uses a lot less resources, and it's just this lush, productive, fecund, resilient ecosystem and landscape that grows food, fuel, fodder, fun, fecundity, feline felicity. It sequesters atmospheric inspiration out of strangers who walk by in thin air. And that's what infected me at the Permaculture Institute and other places. And so that's what I tried to figure out how to start to embody in our own life and then through a range of strategies you'll see in DailyAx. And just one metric from the climate perspective, rightfully a lot of attention is on large scale landscape transformation, which is really important in sequestration. But there's immense potential for small solutions and small solution at scale in our urban areas. An inch of rain on our roof is like 1,000 gallons of water. An inch of rain on our property that I just, showed you, seventh of an acre, is like 4,000 gallons of water. An inch of rain on our city is 240 million gallons of water. And so similarly, a good friend of ours created this carbon calculator called Bond Calculator. And he did a audit of every super detailed, every landscape pin, piece of irrigation, you name it. Of our garden and then of the food forest we installed across the street. And just our little seventh of acre lot with two houses on it sequesters over 2 tons of carbon. And, depending on how you do the calculations, that's about the same as 20 mature oak trees are driving around the planet. And so it's like if our landscape's got 2 tons going on it and all these other benefits, and then the food forest across the street's another ton. Just even in our neighborhood, the 20 sites, imagine the sequestration and other benefits. And so the potential to scale small and in-town solutions is really powerful. So in the and when I go through this presentation, I give a little snapshot slide at the end of roughly 5-year periods, just to kind of capture some of the insights and strategies of the different phases. That may apply to where you're currently at or where you'd like to go as an organization. And so, starting out with anything, there's a great book called Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And it's about like starting with the deeper why that drives you, the purpose. And then from there, if you're in touch with that, you will find the right people and supporters to join your cause, whatever it is. And so we started with publishing up on the left this little black and white zine. Media is a lot different these days, but to just kind of put our voice and vision out there and add lots of humor and poetry and all kinds of things. And it became a vehicle really to build relationships and connections, and all kinds of people started coming in and reaching out to us to get involved. The second thing, I'd heard about when I first started DailyAx, this permaculture bike tour in Berkeley, California. It's like, oh my God, that's a great idea. We need to show people these solutions because that's what worked for me. I got exposed to different gardens and it cracked me open to what was possible. So I'm like, if it worked for me, it'll work for others. And so we started doing these, we called them sustainability tours. And we take a bunch of people around to organic farms and green built buildings and permaculture gardens. And you're showing them the voice and the vision and the feel and the taste of this healthy, just, resilient, and reverent world being born. And you're building relationships and building connections, and you're lifting up these green change leaders in our community and even connecting them. So doing a simple tour has a lot of benefits. And, you know, because it's easy to get overwhelmed by the state of the world, focusing on the positive is really important to grow more of it. And so as we started doing ripples and workshops and tours, we started doing events to go out and meet and connect with folks, other partners, other organizations, just to build relationships in the early days, which is always important. But in this first phase, those are kind of the core program areas. In that middle screen on the top is Wurmla. We created this cultural composting worm puppet that we'd roll through like 10,000 people in an audience, and it'd poop out copies of ripples out the back of Wurmla. And part of in the early days was kind of like finding your voice, vision, who's your community? How do people plug in? How do we embody this thing that inspires us on a page, on a tour, in a workshop, at an event? And so we're finding our voice, vision, and core strategies. And in those first years, we had nothing, and it was volunteer-based for a long time. And then just, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, how do we raise money? Selling the journal, selling ads, doing workshop fees, doing membership, all sorts of things to just try and figure out how to bring in some resources to support the work. Then in the second phase, started to build upon that core voice and vision and core ideas and, you know, really start to move into bigger change. And so this is the backyard of our current place. On the right is a constructed wetland graywater system, and it was the first permitted household graywater system in Sonoma County. And this led to a whole bunch of different things, but it came from reconnecting with a permaculture friend at the Darren Doherty workshop when he was out many years ago. And at that point, then this permaculturist also was a civil engineer. So he had the engineering stamp to be able to get things permitted. And we looked at an example of the Berkeley Eco House gray water system. So we pulled from a reference point from another community, got our city to do this permitted gray water system. And then that led to getting involved with a gray water and rainwater working group locally, which had government people and grassroots people and ecological designers. And that became one of a handful of groups around the state. Laura Allen and others were involved in different places. And together we were able to build awareness and public will and to actually help change the California state gray water policy. At that point, we went from that one gray water system, we partnered with Gray Water Action, and then we did 5 gray water systems in our neighborhood in a day. And then we did 13 systems in 2 cities in a weekend. And then we did 100 gray water system challenge. And so, you know, a lot of times we just started small and you get a win, and then you bring in more partners and have more fun and go a little bit bigger and get a bigger win and just keep on building on it. And so then this is the first public food forest we installed about 16 years ago in 2009 across the street from my house at a community center. And at this point in this phase, we also started working with local government as a way to build legitimacy, to build relationships, to affect bigger change, and to try and start to bring in money to get these things paid for, which is a really important leap. And so one day I was sitting on my porch with Dave Earbarn, the head of the water conservation at that point, and we were talking about program ideas. I'm like, Dave, we need to plant a food forest. And he's like, what's a food forest? So I started explaining it to him. And you know, it was a little bit of a stretch getting it through his engineering bosses, all this kind of inspiration and Permi speak. But we worked with Eric Olson and other good partners from Equinox Landscape Design. And so we had some of our Permi business partners helped us design the landscape. And then we got 150 people over 3 days that came out to transform this landscape, to sheet mulch the lawn, to dig bioswales, all that sort of stuff. You could see a before and after on the bottom, they're digging a swale trail, and then how densely populated it is. And so we started to be able to kind of introduce and stretch edges with the city. It was funny, the head of the department, who took a little bit of time to talk this into at the point. He came over on the Saturday, and it was like 80 degrees, and people were sweaty and muddy and digging, and they were laughing and having a great time. He had his two kids in his arm and on his hand, and he just kind of looked a little confused. And he's sort of like, it is hot out, and all these people are happy to be digging all this stuff and saving us a bunch of water while saving a bunch of money and creating a whole bunch of other benefits. And so then, that was like, okay, first public landscape. This is Laurie and Murray's house next door to the Kavanaugh Center. That's Benjamin Farr on the right, who's an amazing permaculture designer and teacher. And so then, we just started spreading it through the neighborhood and start doing these landscape transformations and bringing plants from our garden and other neighbors and getting people together. And just the experience of people getting together and mobilizing and transforming something in a day, engenders incredible hope and empowerment and connection. So then we're like, okay, well, we got to go bigger still. And we got this opportunity. It fell on 350.org's first day of global climate action in 2009. And we got to transform the city hall landscape in Petaluma, about 250 volunteers, multiple organizational partners, saved the city about 1 million gallons of water from all the turf we transformed, 25,000 square feet of turf. Garden beds, rainwater catchment, semi-tractor trailer trucks delivering mulch and compost. And again, brought in, Eric Olson and Rick Taylor and friends who were, running permaculture businesses. And so it was a great chance to partner, sort of creating a guild with like the nonprofit doing the education, the outreach, and the city work, and then bringing in the permaculture businesses. And another total side thing is that people would come and they come to our free events and they would volunteer and they'd learn. And some would want to take the stuff home and just do it themselves. And others would want to do it as with the support of other volunteers. And others would want to hire someone. We've had people grow entire permaculture businesses out starting out volunteering with us and then getting hired by people who are at the workshops they're teaching at. We've had Eric Olson used to bring, an event you'll see later, his clients to our big annual fundraiser, and some of them became our biggest donors. We've had people go on a free tour of my backyard and then drop 100K on a permaculture design and install from one of our partner businesses. So there's some really cool kind of innovative guilding you could do as well. So, this theme of like, okay, get a win, build confidence, build momentum, have fun, go for a bigger win. And so after we did, we're feeling pretty empowered after we transformed the Petaluma City Hall and it was on the cover of the newspaper. And within a week, it got me a meeting with another mayor in the bigger city in Santa Rosa who's then interested. It took years, but the city actually got a landscape transformation done there. So it started rippling to other cities. And which I love the flow of today because I think Matt from City Repair, and I know Sean is doing the Santa Monica 100 Garden Challenge. At this time, 350.org was starting, talking about 350 parts per million climate emissions. I was like, okay, well, that's a really big garden. What if we did a lot of gardens or something? And I'd been up to Portland to the Village Building Convergence and connected and done talks, and I was really inspired by their work. And then I heard about this idea of this 100 Garden Challenge in Santa Monica. Somehow I got Sean Jennings' contact info and I asked if he could share some ideas. Super generous of like told me how he organized and everything. And then I was like, okay, so in particular, other reference points too, but the Village Building Convergence from City Repair and the 100 Garden Challenge. And so is this idea with 350 emerging of what if we planted 350 gardens in a weekend? And it scared the hell out of us to even think of the idea. But a bunch of us got together from different organizations. And within 16 weeks of our first meeting, we mobilized over 40 schools, churches, businesses, organizations. And when the dust settled on that weekend, had registered 600 plus gardens that had been installed or rehabbed or retrofitted. And then from there, we just each year kept on doing this annual mobilization and doubling it and doubling it and doubling it. And so at the same time, because we had been working with cities and starting to get city contracts to do some sort of permaculture sustainability work, We'd helped launch a new, more innovative lawn program called Mulch Madness with the city of Petaluma. And because at this time, best practice was to rip out turf and take it to the landfill, where it becomes more greenhouse gas emissions. And you rip out an inch of soil with that turf, that takes nature 500 to 1,000 years to grow. So you're saving water, but you're creating all these other problems. And so taking the permaculture idea of sheet mulching, and we worked with the city to help create a sheet mulching program and launch it, and they gave out free resources. These are slightly out of date numbers, but to sheet mulch over 1,100 lawns over a 13-year period, and pending various factors, that saves hundreds of millions of gallons of water, as well as creating a whole bunch of other benefits. And so, in this phase, the second 5 years of starting to go from inspiration and education to application and transformation of transforming a household landscape and then a public landscape and then a bigger public landscape and then moving into community mobilizations, getting our first city contracts to really be able to strengthen our financial foundation. And this is when a lot of networks and alliances started to emerge, recognizing we have to work together in different ways across community, nonprofit, business, government, in these sort of collective impact approaches. And so these are just a few of the different initiatives that we've kind of helped start or been a part of and served on the boards of. But as a way to amplify our impact, both locally and then regionally, statewide, and beyond, networks and alliances, which you'll hear more about, was a really key vehicle for that. And so partnerships are at the heart of everything we do. Whether we're from volunteer-based to a small organization to a bit of a bigger organization now, everything we do is in collaboration and in community. Nothing you've seen thus far, nothing we've done on our own, even though we have a phenomenal team and great volunteers. And so these are just a few of the many partnerships we have and have had over the years. And again, going back to that idea from Fritz Capra, that nature sustains the web of life by creating and nurturing community. And so early on, we took that as our core directive. And in that regard, in prepping for this presentation, I looked over, I don't know, 10 or 15 years of so many amazing pictures of mobilizations and transformations and parties and gatherings and just so much fun and so much richness. A lot of hard work, a lot of difficulty, all that, but so much richness. And so these are just a few examples. And I'd say whatever avenue you do this work in, as a designer, as an educator, from a nonprofit level, as a business or whatever, just nurturing the hell out of your relations is really important. So we've done a ton of gatherings and parties. This is our cob oven RIP with some pizza in it. And that's the oven on the bottom left. On the bottom right is an annual fundraiser we started called Ripple the World. Really amazing model called the Benevon model. And we would do this big event, start off like 300 people, then it grew and grew and grew to where it was over 600 people would gather every year. It was the biggest gathering of its type in Northern California. And it was a place where all these government and business, nonprofit, school, church, you name it, all these people who have sort of our vision and values would come together and feel a part of something larger. It was a big fundraiser for us. It led to more government contracts and all kinds of things, but it was really an important larger gathering space for the community. And so we do gatherings for our volunteers and our donors and just kind of like nurturing our relationships sort of as much as we possibly can. So the second phase, like I mentioned, we kind of really deepened in a lot. And this is a zone, this is getting into 10 years for us, give or take. That 5 to 10 year zone is where oftentimes a lot of organizations can go out of business. As you can see from our budget, went from 0 to 54K in the first 5 years, and then 54 to 250 in the next 5 years. And so when we were small, we were doubling our budget more readily, just trying to, we still didn't do as good of a job of prioritizing fundraising as I would recommend. I think the way of folks like us is like we get an idea and we're inspired to go do this epic thing and we're like, oh, we'll figure out how to make it pay for itself later. And then we get so busy doing the thing that we forget, oh, wow, we actually have to pay the bills. And it's helpful if you could hire people and they could have living wages and benefits and all these things, which is really important for us organizationally, but to promote. But we were gradually trying to figure out how to find more financially sustainable ways to sustain ourselves. And so the government contracts was a big deal, and establishing Ripple the World as this annual event, but really this year-round process of nurturing our relationships and developing core like networks of multi-year donors. And so at this point, we still just had 3 to 4 mostly underpaid staff. There's a lot of organizations, and I was on the board of Transition US for nearly a decade. Transition US's budget was around 200K, sometimes less, sometimes a little more. I think Pina's in that zone. You could do a lot with this size budget. I would make the case that we need more capacity and more hired people to do work. You still need volunteers and to put in the time, but we can use a lot more capacity. But so a lot really happened kind of in this phase for us. And then, as I'd mentioned, the garden challenge turned into the home and garden challenge, turned into the community resilience challenge. And we just kept on doubling and doubling and doubling to where after 10 years, it had spread about 100,000 actions and projects had been registered. And all like we did that on a volunteer basis early on. But having a powerful collective call to action that a lot of different interested parties could get involved in is a really powerful strategy. Those original educational strategies are great, tours, workshops, that kind of thing. Mobilizations are transformations, doing landscape transformations are obviously an important piece. The collective mobilizations, the alliance and network building, all really important strategies to utilize. And so, as we are doing this at the time, lots of other organizations started to want to partner and replicate and grab it and run. And we were like, please do, take it and run with it. And so, those are some examples. And then, in 2015, it's been one long drought in California, but that was in a particularly acute phase. And so we have been involved in a lot of crisis response over the years. And this is one of those moments where we mobilized. And over the span of a few months, through some innovative programs and partnerships, we saved more water on projects in months than we did in years. One of the cool things we did, we partnered with a commercial real estate firm, Unlikely Partners, and we did this thing called mulch stock, which we was like the largest peaceful lawn transformation on record. And you could see we had t-shirts in that, and we had musicians and we had massage therapists. And together we transformed 60,000 square feet of turf. It saved about $125,000 in installation costs and like about 1.6 million gallons of water per year. So we just kind of kept on doing these bigger projects. Another really cool project we did in that time in partnership with the Water Agency and Conservation Corps North Bay and other municipalities, this amazing youth crew up on the left transformed 30 lawns in 30 days to save about 750,000 gallons of water, as well as create a lot of other benefit. You could see they also did another city hall transformation. And what was really cool, Conservation Corps North Bay is still one of our partners today. Now we're trying to do bigger things, but the young folks who were doing this, they got to be out in neighborhoods and feel a part of a larger movement. That thing I think a lot of us want and need to feel a part of something larger. And so, we were doing, as I mentioned, we started doing more work with more cities and we were spreading these ideas to other cities and spreading this idea of sheet mulching instead of ripping out the turf. And so we did city halls and fire stations and parks and schools and you name it. There's a bunch of different youth in these pictures and some volunteers feeding each other edible flowers. So as I'd mentioned, kind of in that second phase, that's when a lot of communities, alliance and networks started to emerge. That's when the transition movement launched and started to grow. And kind of in the second phase, then, they had, like, as an example, in Northern California, years before, we had our first permaculture regional gatherings, and those started to happen more regularly. Then, as the transition town movement started to grow in the US through Transition US's support, then we had these regional transition gatherings. And then the permaculture and transition gatherings combined. And then we started to have this amazing influence and influx from the environmental justice movements. And so I was fortunate enough, like in permaculture, and then being on the board of Transition US and being partnered with some government agencies. Bottom picture is Brock speaking at a Bioneers gathering. Upper right is a really incredible state-level water conference called Localizing California Waters. And so started to get be in these different movement spaces on steering committees and speaking and organizing at these things in related but different movements. That middle picture, that beautiful face smiling at you is Oscar Chavez, who at the time was one of the two leads for the Sonoma County Department of Health and Human Services. Next to him was the director in the health department. And then after that, Mike McGuire, at the time, was our county supervisor, which is the top elected official in a county. And then James Gore, other county supervisor. And so now Oscar heads our community foundation, moving a lot of resources out into the community. Ellen's helping run a nonprofit. Mike McGuire went from being our county supervisor to our state senator to the state Senate majority leader. Like, he's the head of the Senate now in California. And he's about to term out. And then James Gore next to him is running for that position. And so we started bringing government partners at different parts of the system to permaculture gatherings. The picture they're at was after the permaculture and transition regional gatherings merged, and then the EJ groups came blending in, and that merged. And this was the first combination of a regional and then the national permaculture gathering. And then we were trying to bring in these government partners to show how we could work with government in different ways. So there's kind of a lot of, over time, movements and evolutions and just different networks and communities and conferences. And there's bit less of them now. Like, that's the amazing thing about this gathering and other ones, but it is really important, whether the local, state, national, international, that we have these places to convene, to connect, to share. And then, so you could see, in this phase, we deepened into our community mobilizations. We moved into crisis response in the drought and came up with some innovative programs. We got further in the network alliance and kind of coalition building space. And then we are able to continue to grow our budget and really, at this point, getting a bit more mature, still small, but staff and systems to run the organization. And at this point, we'd been, partnering with government for a while. So we were getting that a little more dialed in. Our fundraising and our care for our volunteers and donors got better, which is what sustains the work. And then we had, five to nine staff. And so in 2017, some of you may know or remember, Sonoma County, Santa Rosa got hit by devastating fires. And it was kind of, from a lot of folks' recollection, it was when these climate-fueled fires that we've had a lot of for the last 8 or so years, they really kicked off. It was the first time a fire jumped a freeway and burned down a good chunk of a community. And so because we had been doing this on-the-ground practical work and we're so relationship-based and networked and connected, within a week or so of these devastating fires move forward, which literally started the day after the Northern California regional convergence. We jumped into action with a range of groups and helped launch a number of different initiatives. SoCo Rises was really from an equity perspective and bringing community voice. There was a big collaboration that created this report on the right between government agencies and nonprofits, dozens of them. Around fire resiliency. And then, with about a half dozen other environmental and justice groups, we started the Just and Resilient Future Fund and raised about $300,000 to be able to give to small farmers and farm workers and fire survivors and nonprofits. One of these efforts we partnered with agencies on and other permaculture businesses and groups was creating free landscape design templates, which were informed by the community, not a top-down approach, but we did these big listening sessions. And then on the bottom left, you could see, you know, innovative on the policy side of, we actually would have sessions where you could get your landscape plans adapted and permitted on the day. And the reason why this is important is because you know, people are doing through so much when they're trying to rebuild after the fires, and you're required to have a functioning landscape to be able to get into your house. So it's a big deal. And these templates really helped a lot of people get in their homes. You can see over 47% of fire rebuilders used them. This won the agencies a number of awards, similar to, I mentioned above, Mulchstock, that won awards for our business partner. And so, you know, these things are getting recognized and spread by wider communities. So Petaluma Climate Mobilization, I know I'm getting a smidge tight on time, but all this stuff built through time and strategies evolved, but we were learning and evolving and partnerships were deepening. And what a lot of this decade plus of doing permaculture work in our communities and with government and all these partners, it enabled an enormous quickening in the last 6 years in Petaluma. Essentially, us and a number of other local grassroots people, business organizations, founded a group called Climate Action Petaluma in 2019. And this is when Sunrise Movement was rising up. You can see there's a Sunrise speaker. And we created a campaign to get our city to declare climate emergency, to establish a new climate cabinet or climate commission, and then to take action, take equitable climate action, to really prioritize things because the fires and everything that was happening. And so we mobilized hundreds of people to sign a petition, and we did a big rally outside the city's planning session. And we had this incredible new city manager and a council that heard us, and they all responded in the affirmative. We were kind of surprised that, like, okay, we need to address this. And so pretty quickly, the council and the city worked with us, and we developed language from the climate emergency resolution. And we did community engagement and outreach and gave them ideas about putting together the commission. And we helped fill it, which was a more culturally, racially diverse commission than we'd ever had, and more youth voices. When it came through, it also got a record number of applicants for the commission, and it was the city's first ever public interview process. So we're constantly working with the city to kind of do things differently. Petaluma was the first city in Sonoma County to declare climate emergency. This rippled through the rest of the cities and county, and Sonoma County became the first county in the U.S. to have all jurisdictions declare climate emergency. About this time, one of our former staff was on city council, who was the climate champion, Delinda Fisher. She went through our six-month permaculture design course years before that we taught with Toby Hemingway. And she helped drive a lot of this, understanding a grassroots and permaculture perspective, but then sitting on city council. And also she put forward a vote for Petaluma to become the first city in the U.S. to ban gas stations, which the city did. And all of this led to 2030 bold, aggressive climate targets. And in COVID, you know, right when COVID was kicking off and everybody was buried in all of that, the new climate commission that we helped catalyze, and Daily Acts and about two dozen volunteers came together right in the start of COVID. And within 2 months, we wrote a 50-page climate emergency framework with partnerships with the commission and the city, ultimately adopted by the city as the guiding framework. It's the only one I know probably in the US, but where the community literally wrote the guiding document for where the city's going now. At the same time, I mentioned this idea of kind of planting a bunch of seeds at once in a crisis or a key period. And so one of the other things that we did in this time was partner with a number of local organizations, Botanical Bus and others, and we gave out 1,000 garden kits for, you know, with, all written in Spanish as well, and culturally appropriate plants, food plants, for folks who lived in apartments and rental units and folks who were in need of some extra food. And so that was a the COVID way to continue the garden mobilizations. We also, took over, we're asked to take on or launch a number of initiatives of supporting the Environmental Health Network and Eco to School Youth Program, the Leadership Institute. And then we released a copy of our book at that time, which if you're interested, there's greater detail about all the stuff I'm flying through now, from the personal ecology compass development to how you apply that in organizing in an organization and coalitions, all that kind of thing. And so, we're able to continue to grow and evolve our organizational systems and maturity and all those sort of things in this. And a lot of good happened. And, some of the initiatives that we'd launched and grown as we're getting bigger and we're paying people living wages and they have benefits and all this stuff. And you have infrastructure, which is really good for building capacity, but it becomes expensive to run an organization. It becomes difficult to sustain things. And so there's some, programs and initiatives that we had to hand off or close down. And it was really difficult. Like, it's important to just kind of go for and take things on, and very humbling and difficult to, on the team and on the community when you have to close down initiatives too. So that's just kind of part of the reality of doing these things. So Land Resilience Partnership, a key program we're really focused on now. This is incredible. It's a statewide initiative. As we built our capacity, we got about $6 million in grants in the last few years to do 64 installations and landscape transformations at schools, parks, households in more racially and economically diverse areas to really increase access to resources, saving millions of gallons of water, doing dozens of gray water systems and rain gardens and all sorts of things. These are just a couple examples of some of the numbers of our first five transformations. And then you look on the left, if we did our partners did an audit of what it'd be if you scaled these, and you go from tens of thousands of gallons to tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of gallons of water saved, as well as other benefits. And the Land Resilience Partnership just received some funding from the state to spread this approach to six regions across the state. And there's interest beyond California, but in a third of the counties as well. And so this is, one of the avenues that we're focused on. I'd mentioned a lot of the work that Petaluma had been done. These upper pictures are members of the two cohorts of the Petaluma Equitable Climate Action Coalition that Daily Acts launched and founded with Equity First Consulting. And we raised some money and we were able to fund 200% BIPOC cohorts to learn about climate, to attend climate commission meetings, city council meetings, to build the skills to organize their communities, to get input, and then to be able to make policy recommendations, a number of which have been implemented by the city. And that was one of the projects highlighted recently. The city of Petaluma was asked to go for this national All-American Cities Award because all these great things they've been doing for these years. And they asked me and Daily Acts to be the lead for the application. And we just found out we're a finalist. And so now we're working towards a presentation this summer where we'll go out and network and connect and compete against with our stories of all this climate work with the other top 19 cities from around the country. And so, it's kind of amazing how far you can take these things, building relationships, taking action, small groups, that kind of thing. And, we're in the middle of this. We're another cool thing about bringing all these resources in. Our staff has grown a bit, but now because of these grants, we've been able to put millions of dollars worth of free and reduced price landscape installations into our community and to fund partner organizations and businesses. So to actually, which is a goal of ours to continue, like, how do we bring in more resources? How do we change the policies which remove barriers and unleash further resources, really, to start to scale out these sort of solutions? This is a great book, if you're interested, called Forces for Good. And it highlights six best practices for sort of scaling solutions. And it highlights examples across the political spectrum, all types of organizations. And I read it years into DailyX. I'm like, oh my God, we're doing that stuff. That's so cool. And there's still plenty to learn. But a lot of the things you've been hearing about of sharing leadership and inspiring strong supporters, nurturing our networks, being adaptive and responsive, and this idea of advocate and serve, like we partner with our cities and our governments to implement programs for them, which is a great pathway. And we do it in a very relational, we are in this together, but we also advocate. We also work to change policy where it needs to happen. And so doing those two things together is kind of an important combo strategy. And then just, back to these four sections, reverence, ripples, relationship, resilience, also frame the four sections of the book. And like I mentioned, are, it's kind of like similar to the permaculture approach. These are our values and our operating principles we seek to live up to each day. And these strategies can apply from you personally in your life to how do you find your voice and do shared pathfinding in an organization to, we're doing it with really complicated collaborations with dozens of organizational and agency partners of all sorts. And everybody's busy trying to do a lot of good things. So, for us, it's finding your, finding your core. And then if folks are interested, we do have copies of the book. If you get them directly from us, they're sustainably printed, or you could get them at Amazon as well. But knowing the Permi crowd, you can reach out to us. We have a bunch of resources, case studies, webinars, videos, things on our website, and we're always trying to add more to be able to help provide resources for you all. And just just big gratitude. Like I said, it's an honor to be here with you all. Permaculture, this community, this work has so influenced me and DailyX. Super blessed and honored, and look forward to connecting with you all in the Q&A.
Traythan, thank you so much, man. That was amazing. Big gratitude back to you for all the work that you all have been doing all these years, and then to be able to distill it down into these bite-sized chunks that really anybody can apply, whether they're starting or halfway on a journey in their city. Like, you've given us a lot of stepping stones to get to that next step. And it's funny, you're the closeout of the summit with this sort of like getting big and scaling up. And we started the summit with bioregional economics, really thinking like, how
Nice.
can we affect things at a large scale? And sort of wove a bunch of stories in. But I think I want to keep encouraging folks to come back to like, how can we make big impacts? Because that's what the world needs. And we, as permaculturists and designers, kind of know how to do that. Obviously, you have to get skilled at it and work with skilled professionals. But I think the world needs permaculture to scale up. So thank you for that
Oh my
vision.
God. Well, and that was what I didn't put in there. It slipped in, but because I was involved in a lot of the international movements for permaculture and judging for a while, I'm like, as I was like, oh my God, permaculture is so critical, and the state of our social infrastructure is so underdeveloped. I'm like, Jesus, we have to like up our game, on the fundraising side, organizationally.
Yep.
Yeah, we it is ripe, and we just got to up our game a bit.
Yeah, and thanks to folks like you've kind of figured out how to do that, work with government, not just fight against things we don't want all the time. So thanks
Absolutely.
again, Trey. Then, and with respect to time, I'll have to let you go, but
Yeah.
stay in touch and hope to be in contact soon. Thanks,
Awesome.
everybody. We'll see you at the next one.
All right, man. Take care.
It's nice that Pynet is there to speak up and help network the permaculture movement. It's only capturing a fraction of the movement that are officially involved and are members. So, boy, if Pynet could get all the permacultures, or half of them, or a fourth of them, to all sign up and become working together, Pynet could just really do so much more.
Just every one of my 2,000 students, and all the students that have been through the course, wherever they are in the world, have in some way made a profound impact. And we could do much more if we could link them up and support them strategically. So that's why I'm asking for support from the government.